With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face.
I think this next interview is a first for me, not in the sense of the interview, but in the film that that we're going to be talking about. The film is Enzi, or Ever After, played at the Toronto International Film Festival this year, world premiere, and we had the pleasure, or I had the pleasure of talking with the director, Carolina Hilsgaard, about this, you know, as Tiff is saying, this chilling second feature. It's a zombie film. This is a first for me, and boy, am I glad I dove in. It's a beautiful film. The cinematography is stunning. It is gorgeous to watch, and it's also incredibly thoughtful and deeply reflective. This is an environmental film. This is a film actually that ultimately has a deep faith in humanity. And as I think one of the characters even says in the film, and Caroline and I spoke about this a little bit, but this is a film, a zombie film that has a positive view of the apocalypse. How cool is that? A plague has descended on the earth and only two cities survive. This is what the film is all about. You're going to want to do a little bit of research on this film, and it's kind of a near future zombie apocalypse film, and maybe, who knows, maybe that's even a genre of a particular sort, but lots going on. Never feels preachy, but has a powerful punch that's connected to it. Do a little bit of research, go in deep, and take my word for it. You're going to enjoy this film. Stay tuned for the interview coming right up with Carolina Hilsgaard about her new film, Ever After. Don't forget, davidpecklive.com for more information about my speaking and my writing. And also, if you would like to, and face2facelive.ca for a whole host of other interviews from the festival this year. We've got a few authors coming up in the near future. Stay tuned for that. And if you want to support the work that I'm doing, if you're encouraged by it, if you're getting into it, please consider doing that through patreon.com. You can do that there. And also, if you can't afford to do that, I'm going to ask you if you wouldn't mind leaving a review for us on iTunes. I would certainly appreciate it here at Face to Face. Coming right up, Carolina Hilsgaard and her new film, Ever After. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by another very special guest here today at the Toronto International Film Festival, who has just admitted to me that she's a little tired. So we're going to do what we can to change that. We've ordered some coffee, I think. There's a tray of fruit arriving or something. Yeah. And anyway, that's all lies, by the way, folks. Carolina Hilsgaard is here with us today, feeling a little jet-lagged, but eager to talk, I hope, about her new film, Ever After, but really it's Enzi, or Enzite is the...
Enzite.
Yeah, yes. So why don't we just dive right in, and hello, and welcome to Toronto, and thank you for coming, yeah. And congratulations on the film. It's a beautiful zombie film. How's that? Yeah, it's a gorgeous film.
Sounds good.
It's
Sounds
a
good.
Gorgeous yeah. film. This is not my genre. This is not my genre. I'm not a horror guy, but I was in from the beginning for a whole lot of reasons, and I hope we can talk about some of that. But tell us about the the second title, Ever After, mm-hmm. but the actual translation is End of Time.
Yeah. First of all, like, thanks for inviting me. I'm really happy to
thrilled
be here.
To meet
although,
you.
What get coffee or fruit plate? But,
that's right. Well, let's hope it arrives. Yeah. Yes.
So, End Sight, which is like the German title, the translation of that would be End of Times. And the production company decided to add Ever After to the German title. So the whole title is actually Endzeit Ever After.
Oh, that's the whole title.
And I think it refers to the relationship between the two protagonists.
Right. Yeah. Is there any happily ever after there? Is that sort of
I don't want to take. I don't want to say too much about the ending. But
sure.
I mean, I have like a kind of a positive outlook on the apocalypse, so
which
is very anti-Scandinavian because no Scandinavian. I'm from Sweden.
Okay.
And most of them are quite
pessimistic. Quite cynical. Quite pessimistic. Yeah.
I was there this summer, and it hasn't rained for several months in Sweden, and it was like really an apocalyptic feeling to it.
Right. Yeah. Right. Right. There, you really do create a marvelous kind of dystopic sort of tension there, just even with the there's a real simplicity to it. And I guess it's the cinematography as well, but it's stunning. It's a gorgeous film. But there's a line, I can't remember, but there's in the film where, and I don't know if it was Eva or Vivi who said, there's an upside to the apocalypse.
Mm-hmm.
you get to see more stars.
Yeah.
That was one of the thoughts. But is so are you a hopeful cynic? Is that
Yeah. I think we do have to change our ways of existing in this world. We have like obviously some environmental issues going on, and I think we just have to find new ways, but I'm sure we will, because I think I have faith in humanity, although it looks dark at times, but I still believe that we will be able to coexist in some new ways. I think we have to, actually. I think we cannot go on living like this for another 50 years.
Any great film, it seems to me, is layered and has different stories to tell, and there's usually different interpretations and so on, and subtleties. Was this, I was really surprised in a really good way by the environmental edge to the film. Is that typical to the genre? I mean, I'm not, like I said, I've seen a few zombie films, some mm-hmm. of the classics, of course, and I think Mark Forster's World War Z, but yeah, is that typical?
I think most zombie films have like another level,
sure,
like a metaphoric level,
some sort of
yeah. And that's why that's why I wanted to. I'm not like afraid of this genre, because I really like that, and I was, for instance, very fascinated by like the theme or topic of guilt. That's what drew me to the script. That's what I liked about it. That both protagonists feel really guilty about things that they have done, and they have to kind of deal with that in different ways. And I think that's a very human quality, and a lot of us have some kind of guilt. And especially if you come, I've been living in Germany for like the last 17 years, and this guilt aspect is also a very specific thing in Germany. So.
Do you mean sort of individual, or do you mean more of a collective kind?
Also, like a collective guilt. I think in Endzeit, there is. I mean, the zombies do symbolize like a collective guilt in regards to the environment and how we live.
And how we live.
Yeah.
It's pretty clear that there's a line, I guess, I called her the gardener, one of the characters, and we don't want to give too much away for people who may not have seen the film, but I think she makes a comment about how, mankind or humankind was given this gift, and this was my takeaway, given this gift and has been here for such a short time.
Mm-hmm.
And that really stuck with me.
Mm-hmm.
The that as not only as a a statement about where we might be going, but also about how we've kind of been misbehaving.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, considering this like short time. I mean, if you look at the whole evolution, I think mankind is just like a 1 second or something. I don't know.
Right. It's
like,
right. It's a blip on the screen. Yeah.
Yeah. I think the film. I mean, I hope that the film says something about that. And there are many different parts to this film. I mean, there's also like the friendship, which is kind of at its core.
Sure.
The core
sure.
story.
Would these two women have become friends without the apocalypse, or did that drive them together?
I don't think so, because I think Eve, or Eva, as you would say in German, I mean, initially she finds Vivi really annoying.
Right.
I can understand that. She is kind of annoying and is like weak and helpless, and Vivi kind of stumbles through life and is not even sure about life, actually. She's not even sure if she wants to live.
Right,
or not.
Right.
And I think that Eve would, I mean, no, she would probably not have spent a lot of time with Vivi if they wouldn't have been in this like setting.
And there's a really lovely moment too, mm-hmm. where it seems like they're both getting on each other's nerves,
mm-hmm.
I guess you could say. For a variety of reasons,
mm-hmm.
and it's a pretty stressful time, no doubt. And I don't think she hasn't been out of the house in 2 years,
yeah, exactly.
Right?
Yeah,
Since the whatever it is that descended, the plague that descends,
yeah.
She hasn't left the house, and that's pretty interesting for a whole lot of reasons. But it's an act of generosity where she fixes the broken camera,
mm-hmm.
that
yeah, yeah.
seems to sort of take us
there's
to
a shift there.
There's a
yeah.
shift
yeah.
and then the medication and
mm-hmm.
the throwing it away as
mm-hmm.
if I'm concerned about you,
mm-hmm.
you know, I care about you all
mm-hmm.
of a sudden. Is that how much of go wherever you want with this, but what about autobiography for you as a filmmaker? How much of you makes it in? I mean, is that a mirror of a friendship that you had? Or
I mean, again, the story was written by Olivia Feeving, and I, of course, like developed it with her.
Right.
But the ideas are all Olivia's ideas.
Right.
But of course, you have. I mean, I do have a lot of friendships, and I actually also have some more difficult friendships. And I'm using, of course, my own experiences in creating these characters.
Sure,
so
sure.
What I would say is specific about these two people, at least in the beginning, is that they are using each other in a way.
Right, right.
Which is, I'm actually making a new feature film in 4 weeks. We're going to start shooting it.
Wow.
And there's a similar friendship going on there. But between completely different protagonists, but there is an element of, yeah, using each other. And I think for me that's very fascinating, like how you can use another person, but then at a certain point it shifts and it becomes something more, like maybe even some kind of love, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
And that really, that kind of journey is very fascinating to me. Because I think most people do depend on other people to a certain extent. And it's kind of how people are.
I think every great relationship there's give and take, right?
Exactly.
Every great conversation, you sometimes you step back, you listen, you reflect, and you ask a new question. Or
yeah, I mean, I'm not afraid of showing people where they're probably not the best version of themselves.
Right.
I think
right.
that's pretty interesting.
Well, and isn't it interesting, too, in a zombie film, imagine if we were thrown into this
mm-hmm.
tomorrow. You know, there's a great film. I had the good fortune of interviewing Don McKellar this morning, and he made a film last night in 1999. It was kind of an end-of-the-world film, again,
mm-hmm.
apocalyptic.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Beautiful film, one of my favorites, actually. And it has this gorgeous ending, like, by the way, your film. I love the film, the ending of your film. It's just, it's beautiful. It's hopeful. How could you be cynical, you know, after seeing the ending of the film? And that's all I'm going to say about it. But how would we behave?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's kind of the tagline for the film for last night was there's only 6 hours left,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
What would you do?
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would you treat others?
Yeah.
You know, would you look out for others? Would you
mm-hmm.
just save yourself?
Yeah.
You know, what was the line? Only the asshole survived?
Yeah.
Wasn't that the line
yeah,
from
yeah,
the
yeah,
film?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's true. And I think most people, they are kind of egoistic, and that's just the way we are. Like, and then if you want to have some moral qualities or actions, I think you actually do have to, make an effort.
Yeah, you have to step. Yeah. You have to step not, into it.
Yeah, it's not something we have like naturally. You know, although we like raised in this kind of culture, I think it's still something that we have to consciously choose under certain extreme circumstances. And you can see that. I mean, you can read about it. Like, you know, when there is like an awful catastrophe, like a ship sinking, and who are the survivors? The survivors are the people that actually climbed onto other people, like they made their way by pushing other people down, and they have extreme guilt feelings. I've been reading a lot, and I've been researching a lot before I shot this film, and it's really sad, and it's also fascinating.
What do they call it? Survivor guilt.
Because they had, most of them had to take extreme measures to actually survive.
And yeah, well, you know, it's interesting you bring up choice, and I couldn't help but having studied philosophy for years and read quite a bit of modern existentialism, the Germans and the French were very good at it. And a few of the English too, I suppose, but lots of others. But I studied a lot of Heidegger and Nietzsche and Simone de Beauvoir and so on. There's a profoundly and deeply existential edge to your film. I don't know how intentional that was for you as the... And I think it's interesting, too, what you said about how it was someone else's story, but my film. And yet there's probably... That line blurs, right? Mm-hmm. From time to time, right? I would imagine.
Yeah.
As a storyteller.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I had to take the story and make it into
and make
my
it your
own. Yeah. That's, of course, something I did. But I didn't do it alone. I did it with Leah Stryker, the director of photography. So we developed like a very strong visual concept, like actually a year before shooting, almost. So we knew what we were doing the whole time, and this concept was probably a bit different than what the author was thinking, and because we didn't use like comic element aesthetic, but we wanted a more elevated, unrealistic style. And so of course I made it my own way, but I'm still, what was the question again about the existential
that idea that we are who we are by, I mean, there's so many metaphors.
It's just like free choice.
Free choice, responsibility, step into it, step into the future, this idea that you're hopeful that, yes, it's pretty horrible. There is an apocalypse. There's a good side to the apocalypse. There's this despair all around us, but we're gonna step forward anyway. Like the great line is, and I wrote it down, if you have enough courage for that, you might as well try living. Like if that's not a statement that Jean-Paul Sartre wrote, I'm not sure. You know what I mean? Like that's amazing to me. I love that. That's coming through in a horror film.
I also had this working thesis while making the film that the protagonists have to embrace chaos. And that's
a line in the film, isn't it? Doesn't the gardener say something about peace and chaos?
Similar, in chaos there is peace. And I think in a way we cannot control everything. There's just some things which are out of our reach, and we have to, I think, rethink our living strategies, because we don't really know what's going to happen, right? If you look at the world leaders of today, there are just so much uncertainty going on in so many countries right now, and we cannot do that much about it.
We can consume the news, I suppose, write the odd letter, maybe get involved politically in some way, I guess, but it is hard. I mean, I do a lot of work in advocacy, actually. That's how I make my living and come alongside young people as they you know, sign petitions and campaigns and so on. And it's really hard to actually measure if you're having any impact, if you're actually making any kind of change. But I still think, I'd like to think we still have to do it. I don't know if the alternative is better.
No, of course. I mean, we still live in like the free world, but I'm thinking about some countries which are not that far away from Germany, where they don't really necessarily have free elections, and these leaders have quite an influence also on Germany, you know, because of the proximity and because of various like trade deals and stuff like that. So it's, yeah, of course we can elect new leaders and we can make petitions, but there will still be nations where that is not possible, and they also influence the way of living. And I think we also, maybe I'm straying off topic, but I think also the way that internet influences undemocratic movements in the world is very problematic.
I love how you bring up the fact in the film that the internet has been dead for a couple of years. Is it through Facebook or Instagram or something like that? Yeah. I haven't checked my Instagram in 2 years. I can't remember what the moment was. But the implications of that, you know, are pretty profound. This thing that we just all have such ready access to, and I just couldn't help. I mean, it's, to me, it was comical, but at the same time, kind of frightening. That we live kind of on this precarious, you know, sort of edge.
Yeah. I think Facebook, for instance, really influence our lives to an extent which maybe in 10 years we'll be able to see exactly what's been going on. I mean, we're already now like seeing a lot of stuff.
You mean like what are the implications of it?
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
How elections are like, influenced then.
Right, and what impact has it had on our own lives? I love that we call it social media. I went to see David Fincher's film, The Social Network, seven years ago.
It's quite old.
Maybe even 10. Yeah. And I was in Washington, went to a theater, and I was by myself, and I couldn't help but laugh. I was the only person in the theater, and I couldn't help but laugh. Here I am watching this film about The Social Network that's supposed to be connecting us all by myself.
Yeah.
But yeah. Maybe that's the metaphor. Why Germany? I mean, maybe that wasn't your decision. That's the book, the writing, and so on. Two cities left. Anything, you know, you're trying to communicate there? Or was it just...
I mean, although I'm Swedish, I live in Germany and I make German films. Mm-hmm. So in many ways, I am German. I mean, they're seen as being German. And Olivia, the screenwriter, is from Jena and lives in Weimar. And this story, and I think she came up with this story while being on a train between these two cities. And she was stuck on a train and the train stopped. And she was just sitting in this train and looking at the fields because it's very like countryside-like and kind of remote place. And she was imagining, what if like a horde of zombies came? Now, what would we do? And that was like the starting point of that.
That was the, what would... That's pretty funny. But, I mean, story has to start somewhere, right?
Yeah, but I didn't know these cities. I mean, to me, there were not any... I didn't care about them that much. Like, it could have been any cities.
Could have been anywhere.
Yeah, to me, personally. Yeah. But, I mean, I heard about Weimar, of course, and Goethe and Schiller. But I had no relation to them whatsoever.
Well, and I think that's kind of, I mean, as a director, as a storyteller, isn't that what you're hoping, that I will situate myself in the story, that this could have been...
It could have been any...
Toronto and Bradford.
Exactly.
Right?
It wasn't that important to make, like, a realistic version of that. Like, we weren't, like, concerned about that at all. It's just, like, two German cities.
Yeah.
I mean, it's actually in Eastern Germany, which is quite interesting because it's, like, a less developed part.
Right.
Yeah.
So I'm fascinated that you're already starting on your next project. Is it linked in any way, would you say, to this?
No, I mean, the next project, it's based on my own screenplay, and I've been working on it for a really long time. We finally got the financing together, and we're shooting in Spain next month.
Oh, wow, okay.
And it's based on, like, childhood memories of mine.
Interesting.
Yeah. And it's really quite different. It's like two very young protagonists, like a 12-year-old girl and a 15-year-old boy. It's also references like the immigration theme that we have in Europe right now.
Right,
I mean,
now,
we
yeah.
have like a lot of mm-hmm. immigrants coming.
Sure, yeah.
So it's a comment.
Yeah, I guess one of the questions I did want to ask you about was, the environmental aspect mm-hmm. of the film is very strong and really, and I wanted to say, so are you an environmentalist? I mean, mm-hmm. in a way, I guess we can't not be environmentalists, mm-hmm. but lots of people aren't.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating how woven it is into the story.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not more of an environmentalist than anyone else, I think. I think I'm worried, but I'm not like a bit... I think it's good we're discussing it,
sure,
but I'm not
sure.
like, you know, going to the North Pole and checking like the levels of ice.
Right.
I mean, I'm not that engaged.
Sure.
I'm like most people. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
But then I thought, like, at least I'm going to like comment on this. Like, I'm going to make a statement.
Make a statement, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you do it beautifully. You really do. And what I love about the film, and even in the end narration sort of that, the reflection on where we're at and why we're here in this mess, this apocalypse, it's never preachy. You
I'm know, happy which to
is,
hear that.
Yeah, which
yeah.
is really lovely.
That
there are some reasons why we're here.
Yeah.
Why we're in this mess, and maybe these are a couple of them. And yet, and again, folks, I'm not going to tell you how it ends, but it's beautiful and it's hopeful and it's relational. It's
yeah.
you know, hope is to be found in others. You know,
yeah,
that's
yeah.
kind of
a nice way to put it.
Yeah, and it's really beautiful. So yeah, we didn't. And what we haven't been able to, we're going to have to wrap it up in a couple of minutes. But we didn't talk a lot about the guilt thing. I find that really interesting with
mm-hmm.
with Renata's character
mm-hmm.
and the sister, and that coming back to
mm-hmm.
that scene over the demons that are haunting. Her and how do you really come to terms with that kind of a thing? Maybe that's really the apocalypse.
Yeah,
right.
I think so.
The relational apocalypse.
Yeah, yeah, it's true. I think the film refers to guilt. I mean, you asked me before if it's collective guilt or
yes,
individual,
yeah,
but
yeah.
To be honest, I think it's both.
It's both.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
But the individual guilt, of course, is more like probably personal and relational, like
yeah.
I think in a way it's healthy
right.
that we feel guilt
right.
because the problem starts when we don't feel guilt.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. No, I think that's probably true. I always like to think that guilt hopefully leads to conviction, and then that's going to lead to some kind of
mm-hmm.
I don't know, change or action or something. There's a lot of women in this film.
Mm-hmm. True. Yeah.
And it seems like the only men are zombies or dead guys. Is that a fair observation?
Yeah, I mean, there are some men working on the
That's true,
wall.
Yeah. On the, that's right, yes.
But
yes.
they're looking kind of sad.
They're looking pretty
yeah.
sad.
But as are the women. I mean, I must say, there are women, but not all of them are good.
Right.
I'm not, like, trying to paint, like, a picture of women as being
Fair enough.
Better than
yes,
everyone
else. Yes, there's zombie
I really
women
want
in this.
To point that out.
Yep.
That they are quite... There are as... Yeah, imperfect as any man.
Right, right,
yeah.
right, right. Yeah, no, I know. And the reason I asked it, and we don't have to get into it any more than that, is it's just something that has been picked up on by the media,
mm-hmm.
that there seems to be this focus in the film. And,
yeah.
And hopefully we've generated enough mystery and curiosity around that people are going to want to go and see it. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. You must be exhausted. And again, congratulations and welcome to Toronto. How was the first viewing was last night?
Yeah.
And how did it go?
It was good.
Yeah?
People were really sitting very still in their seats. And
yeah,
really
engaged.
Engaged.
Nice.
Yeah.
Little Q&A afterwards?
Yeah, we had a Q&A. Sorry.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you get out to see it ever after or Enzit.
Enzit.
Enzit,
yeah.
Sorry, wrong pronunciation. Enzit. We've been talking with Carolina Helsgard here at the Toronto International Film Festival about her latest film. Thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more.
and is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
We're outside the Travel Agency, a cannabis store that's got everyone buzzing.
I've been over 20 times at this point. When I walked in, I felt like I'm about to get elevated and lifted in the best way.
Blows my expectations out of the water.
Some of the best customer service I've had in a store.
So nice. Amazing vibe.
Come down to the Travel Agency and see for yourself. For use only by adults age 21 and older. Keep out of reach of children and pets. In case of accidental ingestion or overconsumption, contact the National Poison Control Center. Consume responsibly.